Welcome to Triple Take, the podcast where we talk to interesting people about the book, album, and film that shaped them. I'm Carla Jean Whitley.
I'm John Hammontree.
And I'm Matt Scalici.
Our guest today on Triple Take is Fanny Flagg, who has a new book coming out called The Whole Town's Talking. First of all, welcome to our podcast, Fanny. Thanks for coming on.
Well, listen, thank you. I'm thrilled to be talking down to my favorite place in the world, Alabama.
We certainly have, a lot of fans for you in this area, and you've got such a strong relationship to this part of the country. Tell me just kind of a little bit about your new book and what people can expect, you know, in terms of people who've been used to your work in the past.
Well, this, believe it or not, Matt, this is my 10th book. Can you believe that?
And congratulations.
Yeah, I can't believe it. And this one is it's the history of a small town in America, and it starts in the 1800s and it ends all the way into the future, which is great. And it's got a lot of the other characters that I've used before. In the town is Elmwood Springs, Missouri. And although I always place this little town in Missouri, strangely enough, I'm always writing about Alabama. I grew up in Birmingham, and when I was growing up, I grew up in Woodlawn, which was a suburb of Birmingham. And as you know, all the little suburbs were originally like little small towns. And so when I'm writing about a small town, it's in my mind, usually, my grandmother's house I'm describing. And I even have a character named Elner Shemfissel, and I actually had an Aunt Elner who lived in Irondale, Alabama, and her niece was my Aunt Bess Fortenberry, who ran the Irondale Cafe. So, you know, it's I've got very strong ties to Alabama, of course, and wonderful, wonderful memories growing up there.
Now, you mentioned that you've got some of your characters you've used in other books in this book. Again, that's sort of a signature of your work. How much does sort of growing up in a part of the country and in a time where you seem to know everybody, how much has that informed kind of how these little worlds of your books, you know, have been formed?
Well, it's something that I just loved. I love the idea of neighbors and community and family and everybody pulling together. And I think I grew up hearing stories about the Depression. And because my mother was a young girl during the Depression, and she talked about how all peoples pull together, no matter what, and how close they were and how they helped one another. And that always appealed to me. And I think there's a part of me that sort of wished we could get back to that, where we were all kind of, you know, pulling together instead of, kind of pulling apart. So I think that's a major theme of mine, because it's wishful thinking, and and sometimes it does happen.
Well, next year is the 30th anniversary of Fried Green Tomatoes. I would assume that has obviously been a huge part of your life since that was first released. Can you tell me just kind of what a big deal that is for you, that milestone?
Well, it was amazing, because I had no idea when I was writing that book. I was just trying to capture a time and a place at that little Irondale Cafe there in Birmingham, and it never occurred to me that it would be a hit and or somebody would make a movie out of it. And it was exciting and wonderful for me, because in that book I was trying to portray a different version of the South that Hollywood usually does, and I wanted to show the goodness of people and how they did pull together and how they loved one another. And that movie, strangely enough, went all over the world, and was popular all over the world, and it was printed in like 40 different languages. And I get letters to this day from people. I remember I got a letter from a woman in Poland, and she said, "Oh, you're describing my town exactly." So I think it was the characters were sort of universal.
Sure.
And it sort of caught on. And so needless to say, what it meant to me was the fact that I had a book that did well. It gave me a contract to write more books, which was thrilling because it's very hard. As you know, the book business is pretty hard.
Well, let's talk a bit about books and how they influenced you growing up.
You said that the Nancy Drew series has had tremendous influence on you. When did you begin reading those books?
It's, you know, when people say, "What is your favorite book?" And I'd love to be very, you know, literary and say, you know, Pride and Prejudice and or all of these. But actually, when I was in the sixth grade, we had a teacher who read every day a chapter from the Nancy Drew stories, and it just set me wild. I just loved it. And I love the fact that the book, the heroine of the book, was a little girl, because usually all the books for children, like Tom Sawyer and mm-hmm. Huckleberry Finn, they were all for little boys. And so I love the fact that Nancy Drew was an adventuress, you know, and she had all these adventures, and it just sparked my imagination. So I would have to say that Nancy sort of started me out to want to write and have a curious mind like she did. So that's why I always say, you know, Nancy Drew, and I just loved the fact that somebody read to me. I love that. To this day, I like for people to read to me.
Very nice. Well, you know, so we each of us hosts are also answering these questions and recording our own episodes. And I'm like you. I think it's lovely when people can claim these great literary works were the things that had the greatest influence on them. But my pick was the Little Bear books. So I'm right there with you.
Oh, good.
You know, the things that got me hooked as a child were Little Bear and then The Babysitter's Club and Sweet Valley Twins and, you know, that like really common mass market stuff. It wasn't high literary work, but it inspired me in a lot of ways. Also, most of those books that I just listed feature female characters in the lead, and I was able to see myself in those, but also there were so many of those books in those series that it really fed my appetite. It helped me become a voracious reader because I needed to know what happened next to Claudia,
exactly,
Christy, Marianne,
right.
And Dawn.
Yes, you want, and it's suspense, and oh, I just couldn't wait till the next day. Oh, I'd get so excited,
yes.
You know. And, I just loved it. And it's, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for popular culture.
Absolutely.
You know, because it connects us, and we identify with it. And, you know, I am not a person that is you know, a literary snob. I love things that I can relate to.
Yes.
And basically what I still today read are very, you know, sort of uplifting things with a happy ending. And I'm sorry, I just like that.
Well, and I don't think that anybody should have to apologize for liking what they like.
Yeah.
So I think, to me, it's always refreshing when people are comfortable talking about that, whether it's popular or not.
Yeah.
So one thing that I thought was interesting, though, is, you know, part of what seems to resonate with so many women about the Nancy Drew series is that it focuses on a strong female protagonist. But then I've also read that the creator actually thought that a woman's place was in the home. And I just thought that that was such an interesting dichotomy. But it sounds like the presence of this female protagonist has been a source of inspiration for many women, it sounds like you included, to say, oh, hey, I can do that.
Exactly. That's right. Because when particularly when I was growing up, the people that I knew when I was in school, you had very few options. You could either be a teacher, a stewardess, maybe a waitress, and you weren't given that many options. And so the idea that a little girl would be a detective, just thrilling. And of course, the world has changed, so it's just amazing. When I was in New York years ago in the 60s, early 60s, I worked for Candid Camera. And one of the sketches we did was they dressed me up as a female pilot, which was so, you know, it was just unthinkable that a woman would fly a plane. And the people out that we caught were just wouldn't get on the plane if they thought a woman was flying it. And wow. It never, you know, and now we have women pilots and nobody thinks anything of it. So the world has changed in a really wonderful way.
Well, and just this morning, one of my best friends sent me a picture of her little girl sitting in the cockpit of an airplane with her little pilot cap on.
Oh, my God.
It was really cute. Really cute. It was a real airplane. Obviously, the three-year-old was not really flying the airplane. But, you know, little girls today get very different messages than they did even 20, 30 years ago.
That's right, and we had a lot of talent that was wasted because they weren't given the opportunity. As a matter of fact, my last book, The All-Girl Filling Station, mm-hmm. was about female pilots in the Second World War, and I learned a lot about that. After the war was over, they were told to go home, and they couldn't even get a job flying a plane.
Wow.
So there you go.
It sounds like some of those themes from Nancy Drew have shown up in your own work with, you know, what you've just said. And then also your books are they're easy to read in a really lovely, pleasing way. I've been reading The Whole Town's Talking. And, you know, it's just a page turner, not in a necessarily, well, there is an element of suspense, but it's just you get absorbed into the world. It's so accessible. So it seems as though, would it be fair to say that these books have inspired your work itself?
Yes, I think so. I think that's right, sweetheart. And I appreciate that. What I try to do is I try to write short chapters because I know for myself, I have the concentration of a flea, and so I like to write chapters that are about the size of a magazine article, and so people can stop whenever they want to. And I'm trying, and I appreciate that you said that. I try to make my books easy to read and a fast read, and also hopefully give somebody a laugh because we sure need it.
I certainly agree. Now, the only danger here is it makes them hard to put down, because I'm like, oh, one more chapter. Oh, wait, that was only one page. One more chapter. So if I'm late to work, I'm blaming you.
Well, you're a sweetheart. Thank you.
Oh, the little house lay.
So I understand that you are a fan of musicals.
I am. I've started out when I was very young in the theater there in Birmingham. There's a community theater called the Town and Gown Theater. It's now the Virginia Sanford Theater. And so I started when I was about 12 years old and being in musicals, and I just adore them. And I think and it's our great American contribution to the world, musical comedy.
I agree. I completely agree. I grew up in Birmingham, and I was a theater kid all through high school. And,
really? Where'd you go to high school?
Yes. I went to Mountain Brook High School, and while I was there, we had the good fortune of doing West Side Story and Guys and Dolls. And so it was a really great theater scene at the time, and still is. And, you know, we've had the good fortune of being able to interview several actors on our podcast, and a lot of great talent comes through Birmingham and through Alabama. I know Alabama student is, or a former Alabamian is now going to be taking on a role in Hamilton.
I know,
think that'll make two.
It's from our Summerfest, and I am on the board for the Summerfest that gives these kids scholarships, and they get great training. And when I got to New York from Birmingham, I had great training. I was trained and ready to go. So we're so lucky. And we've got a lot of nice theaters. And before I forget it, John, I'm going to be in Birmingham December the 9th at the Lyric Theater. I'm doing an
opening. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So I hope everybody comes. It's free. And I'm going to be talking about the new book. And the Lyric Theater is important to me because, I don't know if you know this or not, but my father and my grandfather were both motion picture machine operators. And my
dad. I did not know that.
Yeah. My dad worked the Lyric Theater when I was a little girl, and my granddaddy was the projectionist at the Alabama Theater and the Ritz Theater downtown for years. So it's going to be like an old homecoming coming back, and I have not seen the renovation of the Lyric Theater, so I'm really looking forward to
it. Oh, it's beautiful. I remember reading an article about the Lyric Theater having fallen into disrepair when I was in high school and just, you know, daydreaming about that theater reopening. And so my wife and I went to the opening of it earlier this year or late last year. And it's just it's a beautiful space. My wife and I got married on the stage at the Alabama Theater. We love the theater community downtown. No, it's we're big fans of the theater down here. And I know that you were part of the original Broadway cast of Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
That's
I believe
right.
You took on the role of Mona Stangley.
And
you also appeared in the film Grease as the nurse, and you were on the new Dick Van Dyke show with obviously one of the great American song and dance men, Dick Van Dyke. And so I know that musicals have been part of your career all the way through, but is there one that stands out as being your favorite?
Well, I love Stephen Sondheim. I love all of his work, but I think the one that I most enjoyed doing was Annie, and I played Miss Hannigan, and I just loved.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, I just love being mean to those little girls, and but they never took me seriously, but I had
of course.
Good time doing Annie, and it's a great score, and I'm just tickled to think you got married at the Alabama Theater. You know, I have great memories of that theater because, believe it or not, I was in the Miss Alabama pageant 7 years in a row and never won. But so I was always down at that Alabama Theater in the Miss Alabama pageant, coming around on that runway, and they had a guy playing the organ, Stars Fell on Alabama. Oh, I remember it well.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a child, we would go there every year for Christmas. We would see either White Christmas or It's a Wonderful Life, and, you know, I think we just kind of fell in love with it as a space then, and so we were actually living in San Francisco at the time, but we knew we wanted to get married in the Alabama Theater, so we came back here and had the ceremony there, and, you know, we had a friend of mine play the organ, and it was great.
It's great. Oh, well, good for you. Well, I think it's terrific, and it says a lot about our hometown that they care so much about preserving things, because a lot of those beautiful old movie palaces have been destroyed. So I'm so happy that we, you know, have kept those two going.
Yeah, it's really creating a great theater district with the Carver, the Lyric, and the Alabama all right there, and then the Red Mountain Cabaret not far away.
Yes.
Well, now, have you seen Hamilton? We talked a little bit about Jordan Fisher being in the new presentation, and I didn't know if that was something that you had the chance to see.
I have not seen it. I certainly have heard, you know, tremendous things about it. My little niece is just thrilled she got to see it, and I'm going to New York right after I'm in Birmingham, and I think I may get a chance to see it, and I'm excited. And I'm hoping he'll be in it so I can say hello to him.
Well, I know there's another Alabama graduate. I don't know if he was a Summerfest or a Red Mountain Theater person, but I know that he, I think he's the first person to have played both the role of Hamilton and Aaron Burr in the production. And there's a there's a great tradition of Alabama theater that we can all be proud of.
And, that's exactly right. And of course, Rebecca Luker. Saw her. She's from Alabama, and I saw her do Phantom of the Opera, and she was just fabulous.
Oh, wow. That's, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So anyhow.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Well, I'm just thrilled to death, John, and I hope to see you when I'm home on the 9th at the Lyric.
Yeah, I would love that. And can find tickets to that online at the Lyric.
BHAM.com? I think so. I'm not sure, but just show up. That's what I'd say.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
So you chose for your movie the 1958 film Gigi, or Gigi, I guess, as they say it in the actual film itself. Tell me kind of why did you pick this movie, and what's sort of your experience with it? When did you first see it?
Well, my parents, as I told you before, my dad was a motion picture machine operator, mm-hmm. but Gigi was playing at another theater, and my mom and my dad and myself and my date, who was named Johnny Campbell, we all went to actually see that film, and I think we saw it at the Alabama. And it was so beautiful because it had shots of Paris, and oh, I just loved it. And I liked it so much because it had all these different characters, age groups. I loved Hermione Gingo and Maurice Chevalier as the older couple. And I loved Louis Jordan, who was so handsome, and the music was beautiful. And as I said earlier, it had a happy ending, and I'm a sucker for a happy ending. And so I think it just had everything. And I don't know if it was because I was so young, it just captured my imagination, and I just thought it was the perfect film.
And it is one of kind of the, it was 1958. It was sort of on the later end of the big Hollywood musicals. So when you were growing up, how big were those kinds of movies to you? The sort of big, spectacular, you know, full color musicals?
Yes. Oh, people would just come from all over, and it was like going to a real theater. And, I remember when Sound of Music came, and Mame, and all these big films, and people would come, and it would just be an event, and it was just so special and beautiful, and everything was in Technicolor, you know, and it was just a delight. And I can remember that in later years, my father left the downtown theaters and went out and worked at the Eastwood Mall when it opened up. And
right.
they would play a musical for, like, you know, a month. And it would be scheduled, you know, showings were just like a theater. And I don't know if they still do that or not. I don't know that they have those big, beautiful musical films anymore.
Talked a lot about that experience growing up in, you know, having a parent working at a theater and running movies. So, I mean, how big was that to you? Did you get a chance to see a lot of the stuff that he was running? Did they sort of just let you run wild in the theater?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I grew up, and I'd love to go to work with my dad. And I'd go up in the booth, and it would be up in the balcony, and I'd just go sit out there and watch the movie, whatever he was running, two or three times, and then I'd run down to the lobby and get myself popcorn and candy, and so I saw almost every movie that came to the Woodlawn Theater when I was very young, and I just fell in love with the theater and movies and theater, and it was because of I think because of what my dad and my granddaddy did. And I'm still very influenced by movies and theater and just love it. And I know that the Virginia Sanford Theater is still doing great stuff, and some of my friends are still performing over there. So when I come home, I'm going to go over. I think they're doing a Christmas show. I'm going to go over and see it. And that little theater, the little Virginia Sanford Theater, is very special to me because that's where I started theater, my theater training. So, yes, I think that the fact that my dad did what he did set me on the path to being in the theater.
Well, you certainly grew up in a time in Birmingham where we had a lot of great, beautiful theaters, and we're getting back to that now, which is great. So one other thing I want to ask you just about, that you're, you know, growing up as somebody who saw so many movies and that was such a huge part of your life. Obviously, you've mentioned kind of the happy ending thing, which is very common Hollywood trope. But what else do you think? Because you obviously don't typically write about the sort of, you know, Hollywood glamour type of, you know, universes. But what else do you think that you got specifically from all of that, you know, being immersed in Hollywood movies growing up? What else do you see that's come across in your writing?
I think that the movies gave us an idealized version of the world, which is great. At the period when I was growing up, it was very positive. The messages were positive, and there was a lot of comedies, and they really didn't dwell on the dark side of life and the seedy side of life, and they showed like only the best of human nature, and I still kind of do that. And I think we took a turn sort of in the 60s where the movies became very dark, and now all of a sudden the movies are all about criminals, and they're either, you know, killers or thieves or, you know, whatever. And it's not about nice people, you know. It's about kind of dark, you know, criminal types. And so I sort of retained that wanting to write about nice people because I happen to believe that the world is full still of really nice people that never get written about. So that's kind of what I have tried to continue to do. And I'm sure you're right. I'm sure it's because of the period that I grew up seeing all that, and it was such a lovely time and a lovely way to think about the world, and I've just continued it.
I'm Matt Scalise. You can find me on social media at Matt Scalise.
I'm Carla Jean Whitley, and you can find me all over social stuff at Ink Stained Life.
And I'm John Hammondtree. You can find me on Twitter at John Hammondtree. And y'all be sure to download us on iTunes and give us a rating. Thanks.